Peace, peace, everyone. It's your girl, Sequoia Bloom, back in your fun episode. And this is a podcast where we talk about whatever breaks the rules. Today's special guest is Dr. Leanna Wolf. She is a sex researcher. She's the author of 177 Lovers and Counting. And I'm excited to have her on here today because I've myself studied Kama Sutra and all types of things. And she has like the research to back up everything, which is very interesting. So I want to get into the book first because that's interesting. You said 177 lovers. I'm like, did you have 177 lovers?
I don't think you want to know about the title. Well, okay, I fathom that I'm a bit older than you. And I came of age in the thick of the baby boom, which born in the mid-50s. And at that point, there was this swell of babies born. And prior to that time, there were less babies born. So what this meant is for women who wanted to partner with a guy who was a bit older than herself, those babies simply were not born. So think about it. Coming into the 60s and 70s, we have this compelling cohort of attractive, educated, vital women who are ultimately not all going to find partners if they're looking for slightly older guys. And so they're the ones who can be seen as responsible for the sexual revolution and second wave feminism, because they were compelling, they were looking for sex, and they, you know, and all the rest of it. And so I'm one of those women. And so if you just think, okay, let's say someone like myself, you know, spends the next 50 years, sometimes in partnership, sometimes dating. She could easily date and hook up with three partners a year. If she did that over 50 years, she'd have 150 partners. So it's not a really high number. It's an average number. And when you think of for the kind of world I came of age in, which was in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it was in this moment when Roe versus Wade became the law of the land. So abortion was always our backup. Birth control was very accessible. I could get birth control at the student health clinic. It was very affordable. And AIDS and COVID-19 had not yet hit. So there was like not a lot of fear around sex. There was plentiful sex.
Wow, that's funny.
Yeah, so it was definitely a different time. And so that's to sort of, and the reason I even used such a number in my title was I had been teaching anthropology for a good many years, something like 37 years. And at some point I decided the cell phones won. I wasn't going to outcompete somebody's Instagram feed or text feed or whatever. How interesting could I be if I wasn't delivering something that pinged personal to each person on their phone? And so my students were challenging. And at some point, the challenge was too much and I didn't want to do it. So I decided I'm going to be a writer. I'd loved writing. And one of the assignments I had given my students for one of my classes, which was a class on anthropology of sex, was to write their own sex history. And their histories were kind of limited because they were young and their idea of what sex was simply, you know, if they had hooked up and had intercourse, and sometimes often they'd had it somewhat. And so that was enough for them. And that was what they'd write. And I'd think, you know, I really should write my history. And when I got around to writing my history, I realized that I'd very much been a sex researcher. And I was willing to try all kinds of things just to find out how they worked. I, wanted to know, what was behind this issue of the G-spot? What was behind, what was this thing that they were talking about? There's a difference between a vaginal and a clitoral orgasm. Why is it that some people want to be tied down and whipped? Why do people want some people want multiple partners? Why do they want to go to, what do they get out of going to orgies? I mean, all these things interested me. And so I'd spent so much of my time trying to figure everything out I could. It was one thing to read about it. And, when I first started trying to figure it out, there wasn't an internet. So I couldn't do a search on it. I had to search for myself and meet people and try things and see how they felt.
Oh, that's so
So
interesting.
what happened is I'm done teaching as my career. And I'm in a writing group thinking I have to structure my life in such a way that, I'm not just doing, not, who knows what people do when they're retired and they don't know what to do.
Yeah,
I
some people don't know
knew.
what to do.
Anyway, so I thought I'll join a writing group. And this will give my week some structure. So I joined this writing group, and it turns out that everybody in the group is a bit older than I am because I had, retired, just at 65. It wasn't, an early, a late retirement or something. And everybody in the group was older, and they hadn't come of age the way I had. I came of age in the thick of feminism and the sexual revolution, and I was writing all these stories about these things I'd tried and experienced and wanted to know, and the people in the group just thought I was, from another planet. And finally, I came in one day, and I thought, they just want a number. So I just wrote an essay and titled it 177 Lovers and Counting. And that quieted them down. They had a number. But the leader of the group thought I was being excessively provocative, and she soon asked me to leave. She says, you're just trying to get attention. I don't think you really want their opinion about your writing. And so, anyway,
Oh,
I
goodness.
left and finished my book in my own way. Got
That's
and
right.
found an amazing publisher,
Oh,
and it
wow.
came out. Yeah, so the book came out in January. It was a long journey getting it out because I finally finished it in the thick of COVID, and there was everything was shut down. It was really hard to find a publisher, find I had had a literary agent from my previous book. And it turned out that person had passed away. And
Oh,
so it was just through all this
so many people are
networking.
passing away. Yeah.
I know, I know. And it
It's
was just through this,
COVID too.
yeah, all of that. So it was through my networking that I found my editor, who was somebody I'd met some years ago, and we were really colleagues. I had no idea that she had had arranged a series with Roman and Littlefield, and that she was looking for material. But we connected. I sent her my stuff, and she immediately wanted to do it. And then when my editor there, acquisition editor, found it, he gave it a massive green light. He was so excited about it. So here we are. The book is out. We're good.
Congratulations. I mean, that's the big deal. There's so much chat about being traditional and then, going the independent route, And you chose a traditional route, and sometimes that does work best for people because the marketing and all the stuff that goes with, being, an author, it's like you kind of want to focus on the art, not so much on, oh, let me be on
Right, and
TikTok,
they
let me
did
do
a
this.
gave me a lot of help. They helped me a lot with design. They have done, they put it on a zillion different websites. It's widely available. They we made it into a textbook because I'm professor, and a lot of students are going to be able to read it this coming year, because it'll be assigned for all kinds of anthropology and psychology and sociology and sexuality classes. So I'm really excited about
Wow.
lot of people getting to engage what was my story and see it through a number of different lenses, including anthropology and history and sexology and psychology. So it's really been amazing.
Man, so in the 60s and 70s, do you, because I mean, you're saying that sex wasn't taboo back then. But it's like now sex is coming off taboo. Like people act like, oh, you need to, like if somebody, especially a woman, if they say they had too many partners, it's like, oh, you're a hoe or whatever the case is. And
Well,
I disagree. I don't think everybody's a hoe per se. What are your thoughts on that? Like.
I think it really it's in the eye of the beholder. And
That's right.
some of us, just are compelling, we're curious, we're interested, we're interesting, and we're gonna find our share of partners. And if you own it, then there's nothing to be embarrassed about. It's only if somebody, for some reason, thinks there's something wrong about having multiple partners. I know my parents try, had some sense that they said, "Well, we think you're promiscuous," and
Yeah,
that
that's
was the word they
the
used. And but I knew exactly what I was up to. I was trying to understand all kinds of things. Like when I traveled in Mexico right after I graduated from college, I went to Berkeley as an undergrad, and basically there was such a heavy anxiety about male chauvinism, and men had to be respectful to women and they had to be equals. And I knew there, was this whole like dynamic of surrender and seduction, and no one had ever done anything like that. Every time we went out for coffee, we shared the bill. I mean, there was nothing like that other way. And I get to Mexico, and suddenly I'm meeting, in addition to living in villages and, embedding myself as a young anthropologist, I was dating Mexican men. Who, I was young, I was 22, I was pretty cute, and I got a lot of offers, and it was a whole other dynamic. And it was part of, my learning in terms of experiencing what it's like, having somebody, really pull the seduction stuff, because I'd never experienced that before.
Yeah, I
And
like
then,
that.
I later, got very curious about, BDSM and domination and
Oh, yeah.
submission. And I didn't, it was something that, was kind of floating around a little, but it wasn't a really known thing. And there, I didn't really know much about, any literature on it. So, but I had some partners that introduced me to it before I even knew that it had a name, or that it was a whole culture of people who did it. And that was, really an ex interesting and extraordinary time. And then eventually I started doing research in other countries as well. I got really interested in multiple partner sexuality.
In
And
Africa.
so, yeah, I went to Africa and I went to Papua New Guinea. And in Africa, I actually came there with a really interesting research problem. What the problem was that my home partner, who was a really nice guy, had gotten involved with another woman because he thought I was seeing somebody, and I wasn't. But I just was excited because I was going to do some work with this guy, and he thought, she's so excited about him. I'm sure they're getting it on. And we weren't. And but he used that as the excuse to get involved with some other woman.
I think
And
so.
she was thinking that he got involved with her just to jumpstart breaking up with me, and that eventually she and he would be partners. And when I found out about it, he said, "No, I don't want to break up with you. I want to have two people." And I thought, well, I had open relationships before, but it was never a thing like a triad amongst three primary partners. I basically, had a home partner, and then I'd see someone else maybe once a week. It wasn't something that was major in terms of disrupting my home life. But this woman had, basically, she wanted equal everything to me. She wanted him to come over to see her as every other night. If he was going to be with me one night, she wanted to be with him the next night. And I'd never tried such a thing. And so and it was very uncomfortable. It's like whenever
Yeah, I
he'd
can
leave,
imagine.
I'd be really upset because I would keep thinking, "Where, it's like, what if somebody breaks into the house? I'm freezing cold. Where is he? Nothing's
Oh,
right." And
man.
so then, basically, what happened is I just said, "I'm going to go to Africa because they know how to do this. They've been doing this for generations." And so I found my way to Nairobi in Kenya and met with an anthropologist at the university there that I was told about. And then he told me some things to look for. And then I was staying with a family who had a lot of people in one of the villages. And so they arranged for one of their cousins to take a bus out there with me. And we got to the village, and I lived there. And I interviewed everybody I could. And,
How
largely
was that?
what was going on is I'd say, "Well, how do you do this? My husband wants me to accept his new woman. And how did you accept the new woman when your husband brought her in?" And so they really cared to help me sort this out because it was emotionally very difficult. And they were so, this was also 1998 when Bill
98.
Clinton was having the affair with Monica Lewinsky and it got exposed.
Oh,
And
man.
they were, and so they started saying, "Well, your president, he should accept he should get married the other woman too. Why should a wealthy man only have one wife?"
Yeah, that's
He
what they believe, especially if they're wealthy.
And they say he's wealthy. He doesn't have a son yet. All he has is one daughter. His wife is probably too old to have another baby. He should have a baby with this girl, Monica. He could have a son and he'd have a legacy. And so
True.
they just thought it was, I learned so much from understanding the world that he had with them that, they showed me by, looking at the issues in my world.
Wow, that's so interesting. So when you went out there and you were speaking with the people of the village, did you date any of the guys or?
No, actually, what happens is I need to, in the villages, I was largely being a professional in
Okay, that makes
anthropology.
sense. Makes
And,
sense.
the main thing people wanted from me was money and connection.
Well,
Because they said, "Well, you're from America. Could you sponsor us in school? Could you bring us a home with you? Could you buy us, all this food because we can't afford much?" And so I, did what I could to, just help in the moment. I mean, I wasn't I wasn't rich and I didn't have a lot of
Yeah, it takes a
money
lot to.
to help everybody. But if there was, if I went without anywhere with somebody, I always bought them, sodas. And if somebody with the family I was living with, if they took me on a drive to see things, I'd always pay for the gas in their car. And I just did what I could to, just contribute.
Oh, that's so nice of you. That's good. And when you were talking to the ladies out there, what did you talk about poly with them and how, how did they feel? Did some of them not like being a second wife or a third wife or fifth?
Well, I don't think any woman grows
Okay.
up dreaming about being a second wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like this, major fantasy, but it's something that they grow up being witness to, that their mother might be a second wife or a third wife. And the truth is every wife has value. And a man would never leave his current wife or wives to get involved with a new one. He's responsible to all of them. He's responsible for the children. And so it actually, there's a logic to it that's superior to the Western world where we think you have to divorce. And that if you meet a new person, you have to leave the other person. And, think about all the kids that grow up with very little access to their fathers because their parents got divorced.
True.
And that doesn't happen there. The father, it remains in the children's lives. And, and there were different wives that truly had different roles. Like, there was like the senior wife, and there was the wife that a man might do his travels with. And so each of them, had value and knew they had value. And, if you were the newest wife, you might get a little more attention, kind of the way, Miss America gets a
Yes,
lot of
for sure.
attention the year she's Miss America. But then
True.
after that, she's former Miss America. And so all these wives know that the year of or two of attention isn't going to last forever. So they enjoy it for what it is and then let it be.
Wow, that's interesting. And I get it for that culture, but I'm curious about, let's say a woman wants two men or three men. And maybe, have you ever approached that situation where they're
Well,
like,
sure. I mean, there's cultures in the world that practice polyandry, and that's, one husband with multiple men. And we see that rarely, but in the highlands of Tibet, it's not uncommon because the farms are such that they need many men to work them. Because they need men to do the trading of the animals, men to do the farming, men to tend the animals. And so several husbands is helpful. And so oftentimes what it is several brothers will all marry one wife. And that's how it's practiced, at least amongst the Nyingma of Tibet. Now, in the Western world, we have polyamory. And here we certainly have women with multiple men. And, it just depends on agreements or just the style of polyamory that they're doing.
Wow, that's interesting.
One of the more.
Oh, what was you about to say?
Yeah, one of the more popular styles of polyamory is called solo polyamory, where each person isn't really looking to have a home partner. They're just looking to be honest and transparent and present with all their partners. And then their goal is to basically have their primary relationship be with themselves. And everybody else is valuable, and they all know that they're not the only one, and that the person they're dating has no intention of becoming primary with anyone, but she or he is enjoying the richness of multiple partners.
Wow. I mean, I think that's interesting. I never judged anyone. I think only judge certain men that don't have any money and they're trying to do it. And it's like, I think that you need to have a certain amount of income if you're going to have several kids and several wives, I would think.
Right.
So that's the only thing I have a problem with that. But other than that, I'm like, do what's best for you.
Right.
So,
Absolutely. Yeah.
yeah. So during your journey as a sex researcher, what has been the most interesting thing you've learned so far? The most peculiar thing, I would say.
Well, it just it really, I think some of it is how it feels to the person who is inserting themselves into the research. And at different times of my life, different things were really, really interesting. Like I was, at one point very interested in BDSM, and I just really thought it was like amazing watching. I'd go to some of these dungeon parties and see people hanging from the rafters and getting whipped really hard and getting and just things that I had never thought were erotic, and to see them, find so much pleasure in this. And then, just experimenting with my own appetites for pain. And if I found a little bit of pain being kind of amping it up, then how much could I tolerate? And, where does this all come from? And then, when I was in India, I had some amazing conversations with folks who were in the thick of their culture's transition from arranged marriage to love marriage. And, my grandparents were in an arranged marriage, and my parents, met each other independently and were very much in a love marriage. And then my life has just been all kinds of adventures. And
I
what I
love it.
saw in India is that what happened in three generations in my family was happening in one generation for many Indians, because they were questioning the arranged marriage. They were looking to have a love marriage. And then they suddenly realized they lived in the modern world and there were so many options. There's traditional dating sites in India that oftentimes the parents will put one group, one site is called Shadi, and the parents will advertise their children and try to arrange it with other parents. But then there's young people who, don't really want to have their parents, find partners, but they feel that they'd rather look themselves.
I agree on that. I mean, I personally wouldn't want to arrange marriage. I mean, there's I think a reality show on that right now, Lifetime, and I just don't think I could do it. I was like, man, I don't even care if he's a millionaire. I just can't. I don't know. I got to feel a connection with someone, and some
Sure.
people don't need that. I mean, I know some people. I've learned so much in the last few years that some people don't need love to be married. They're like, it's okay.
Yeah,
At least
well,
he's good
marriage,
looking.
traditionally was bringing families together. It was really generating alliances for business, for politics, and Anthony and Cleopatra, that was a business political arrangement. It wasn't about love. And, when you think about love, at least the kind of compelling romantic love that Western culture celebrates, doesn't last forever. It's
No,
really
we were just
intense
talking about
for,
that.
yeah, it's intense, but, and it makes it feel like it's what we're here for, is that kind of intensity, but it doesn't last.
Man,
And,
I'm happy you said that because I was just talking to a mom about that. We were talking about how love doesn't really last, well, finish what she's about to say. Sorry about
oh,
that.
well, basically, we use that to bring us together. But then, if you ultimately find find more things going with the person that you were drawn to for all that chemistry, then that's where you start really creating the relationship.
Okay, that's true. Yeah, because love can be
But we are
fleeting.
still
Yeah.
so provoked by romantic love because we have
We
songs
are.
and movies
The
and
princess shining
stories and
over.
right, and we just can't, it's like, how can I just be practical and just look some for someone who's honest and
Yes.
hardworking and trustworthy? What kind of fun would that be?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, I mean, yeah, they want, everybody wants so much. I've been deep searching this whole dating scene for the last few years, and women, they just want certain things. They want a guy with all this and that. It's just, you might not get all of them, but get the ones that the values that matter the most to you. That's what I say. Because the money, I mean, if you want some, if you want to get money, just get with somebody ambitious, I would say. So if you want somebody that has money, or if something happened to you, but this is different now. Like, and I think of the social media, I feel it's like this rapid, okay, I can find better every 5 minutes type energy.
Right,
And
yeah.
so, and the love
It's
is different.
really challenging for us with that
Yeah.
kind of undertow of the constant shiny and the new and the possible. Very, very challenging.
Yeah, so that, I feel sorry for some women. I had a chance to find, had love before in my life. I'm not in a relationship now, but I've had love. I've been loved, and I'm fortunate. But now on TikTok, I've seen these women crying, say they've never been in love. They never had an orgasm in their whole life, or some of them, and they've been in relationships but never had an orgasm. I just think, I just didn't, I was shocked, like, it that people have gone through that, and they just haven't figured out their sexuality, like what gets them, rather it's, you know, them by themselves or with, they just don't know what gets them off. So, you know, so
Yeah, well,
that's,
there's an amazing lack of sex education,
yes.
despite it all. That, and I think some of it is because people live on their screens and they don't really have the facility to look in someone's eyes and to touch them and to caress them and to really feel their caresses coming back. They're too busy flipping through images on their screens. And it, it's really debilitated the possibilities of human to human connection.
Yeah, I'm starting to get worried about the Gen Z generation, and even some millennials like me, because they, a lot of them said they've never had a kiss before, they've never had anything, they never had anybody give them a that connection with me. I said, wow, but during my time, you know, I still, we were kind of half in the computer, half out. Like, I was in the moment where we, it just started, MySpace just started stuff. And I do feel like then I had more connection. And like, now it's like, dang, I feel sorry for the young. I've been told that, you know, pray for the young people, because, well, it's crazy out here. But I still tell people, don't give up, and, you know, and keep trying to figure out things. And like what you did, I think it kind of reminded me of Eat, Pray, Love with Julia Roberts when you were talking. And even though it's a different story, she was finding herself. You know, she could have stayed married to the guy that was doing well. He was good on paper. He looked decent, all this, but she wanted, she just kept wanting more, and wanted to
Yeah,
marvel in life.
right. I know. And I would say that probably what drove me more than anything was to find out all I could. And
Yeah.
that was more interesting than to land with one person. And, maybe it's not the best life strategy, but I've certainly, as some of my reviewers have noted, lived an extraordinary life.
I love that. So, what's the favorite chapter in your book? What's your favorite chapter? I know we're coming up on
Oh
time.
my God, what? I mean, there's so many. I mean, I wrote each chapter with so much thought. Well, I have a Burning Man chapter that's pretty wild, and I love some of the stories in that chapter about, things that you could only do at Burning Man. And I did stuff that I never imagined I would do. And I wrote all about it in that chapter. And it's a really fun chapter.
Oh boy, sounds interesting. This is gonna be a movie. I swear your book's gonna be a
That's
movie. My
what somebody
intuition.
thought.
Yeah.
One of the people who actually first put me in touch with my pub with the with the publishing company, she finally, she w ended up reading the book, and she says, "This has to be a movie." It's so
Yes.
cool.
I would love it because I like out of the box movies. I'm a movie baby. I like TV shows. I feel like it has something to do with society and culture. And
Well, one of the things I've done is I've created a solo show that I perform as part of the story of the book. And I took about a tenth of the book and dramatized it. I have music and dancing and acting, and I perform it. And I'm taking it to the Fringe Festival in Hollywood in June, and we have three performances coming up, and I'm really excited about it. It's been in it's really been fun.
I'm so
And
excited for you. That's so amazing. Because I could feel the energy from you and then like the stories you're saying. I mean, it's just amazing. So before we wrap it up, I always ask my guests, what's a saying or quote that you go by?
oh,
Yes, that's
well,
a
what's
told
sort of
me.
my motto? Well, that there's still more to do.
That was so cool. I love asking this question because I get so many cool responses, and that was amazing. There's so much more to do. And there is so much more to do. I think people put an age on people, like me, what is it? They put a timeline on people's age. Oh, it's got to be, if you ain't doing this at 35, 40, it's over. No, it's not. It's just beginning.
It's not over. If you're alive and you're curious and you have questions and you have appetite, there's still more to do.
Oh man. All right. I can't wait to read your book. I may do a review on it. I do a book review sometime on podcast. I'm trying to get back into it a little bit more, but I may do a review on it because it sounds like something I could sounds really interesting.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And also I saw you do offer consulting services, right?
I
I saw on your
do. I
website.
do. I have
Okay.
a website called Wise Woman Sex and Relationship Consulting. Your viewers
Okay.
are welcome to take a look and reach out to me. And I do sessions by phone, by Zoom, and in person if you happen to be in Southern California.
Oh, neat. Okay, I'm in Vegas, but if you
Okay.
have a book event out here in Vegas, let me know. I'll come and
I will
support
definitely.
you.
I'm actually in San Francisco this evening doing an event, so I
Oh,
do get
wow.
around. Yeah.
Congratulations. I'm so
Thank
happy for
you.
you. Oh my God, I had so much fun talking to you. So many questions I have in my head, but maybe you can come back on. I'm starting a dating podcast to kind of get people more, I guess, not open-minded about dating, but just help people think differently, change their perspective, if you will.
That sounds good.
Yes,
Yeah,
I
I have
know.
a girlfriend who wrote a book called 50 First Dates After 50. You should bring her on your dating podcast. She'd love it, and you'd love her.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah, let me know about her because I'm about to start doing that very soon.
Okay, sounds good.
It's been busy with this, but I'm happy I'm doing it. And I just want to thank you for coming on here. I'm going to share the website and my show notes so the guests can find everything.
Thank you
And
so much. Thank you
you're
for
welcome. I
inviting
had
me. All
so much fun, Dr. Wolf. And have a good
right.
night.
You too.
Thank
Okay.
you. Thanks,
Bye.
everyone. Bye.